What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. This is the first episode in our two-part series paying tribute to guitarist Johnny Shacklett, one of the greatest living legends of the Naptown jazz scene. Johnny Shacklett rose to prominence during the 1950s. He played in many of the Avenue's most famous clubs and performed with many of the Avenue's greatest musicians, including Wes Montgomery, the Hampton Family, Larry Ridley, and many others. For the next 2 weeks, Johnny Shacklett will join us to share his memories of working on the Avenue. We'll also discuss the Baraka, a unique four-neck guitar Johnny built during the late 1960s. And we'll be listening to tracks from Johnny's rare 1969 album, At the Hoffman House. That record features the Avenue jazz legend Mel Rhine on organ and Mel's brother Ronnie Rhine on drums. Let's listen to a track from that album now. This is the Johnny Shacklett Trio with Haskell's Tune. That was the Johnny Shacklett Trio with Haskell's Tune. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Johnny Shacklett. Let's join their conversation as Johnny recalls purchasing his first guitar at a pawn shop in downtown Indianapolis.
Yeah, just to begin with, Johnny, I'd love to hear about your early years and growing up and how you got involved in playing music.
Well, it started, I'd say 12 or maybe 13. Everyone was playing guitar, and I thought I'd give try it myself. And I picked it up, and believe it or not, I didn't do very well. And tried it a couple of times, and I said, well, maybe guitar is not for me. Anyway, as a year or two went by, 14, pushing on 15, I walked by, this was in the downtown area, a pawn shop, and there was a Harmony guitar in the window. And I still had this feeling of wanting to play the guitar, and I was with my mother. And I told my mother, I said, I'd really like to have a guitar if I could. She said, well, let's go in and look at it. Anyway, we went in. It was a Harmony guitar. I didn't have any money. The pawn shop operator said, well, if you don't have any money, I'll let you put it on layaway. And so we had like a dollar or two. So basically, I think we gave the pawn shop operator $2. And we were on the way out the door. He said, you know what, take the guitar and come back and pay me later. And that started, at least I owned the guitar. And it turned out the reason things didn't work for me the first time that I tried playing guitar. I approached it the way everyone else did, right-handed. This time, not even thinking about it, I put the guitar on the left side of me. In other words, a regular right-handed guitar, which would make it, in other words, be upside down. And it just felt like it was at home. And that's when things started to happen. So that started my guitar career. Then I guess I was maybe 15 or 16.
And what year would that have been?
Oh, let's see. Well, that probably would have been around 1952, somewhere in there, 51, 52.
And did you grow up primarily in Indianapolis?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was my birthplace, Indianapolis, Indiana.
What part of town did your family live in?
We lived on the north side of Indianapolis, and that's there's, you know, Indianapolis, like most cities, north, south, east, and west. I lived on a street called Cornelius Avenue, 4132 Cornelius Avenue, and that was.
Where did you go to school?
I went to, believe it or not, I was more self-taught. So after the eighth grade and sort of wanting to be involved in some of the classes offered in high school, all the women in my family were educators. They were principals, and my mother was a teacher. So I was really sort of self-taught, because when I got out of grade school and just about everything that in terms of some of the grammar and what have you, I had already been exposed. So I was sort of a kid not really wanting to go to high school, but searching for something. So I started going to the library every day. And that's how my music career started, going to the Indianapolis Library.
Was this period of self-study you entered into as a teenager just strictly related to music? Did you go to high school during the day?
For a while, but then some of the things I wasn't that interested in terms of my mother was very fluent communicator. So as a young person, I had my vocabulary was more advanced than the average person. And I just was basically not that interested in high school at that particular point. Later on, I was drafted in the service, and I had to perform military duties and go to school and those things in the military. But as far as for music, that was my introduction to music.
That's amazing.
Library.
Yeah.
And then I was also fortunate that a blind pianist by the name of Earl Grandy lived right around the corner.
That's incredible. Yeah, he's such an important figure here in Indianapolis.
And I studied.
Yeah, tell me about
with Earl Grandy.
Tell me about what that was like working with Earl.
Oh, that was just phenomenal. Just a genius. You could take a record or anything and play it and say, "What's this guy doing here, Earl?" He said, "Oh, that's a major seventh chord." And what helped me was by going to the library, I knew all of the chords, all the names, and I was studying diatonic harmony. And I think my approach was pretty detailed. And also, a person by the name of John Watson was a bass player there in Indianapolis. And he was the first person before attending, or I should say, my work at the library. John Watson explained the guitar neck to me, and just a brief introduction to music. It was pretty simple. And after having the guitar, and I had an electric pickup put on it, and was driving the neighbors crazy with all the noise, they called my mother and asked her if there was something I could she could do to because it was disturbing everybody.
We've been listening to guitarist Johnny Shackless sharing his memories of growing up in Indianapolis. Let's pause and listen to another track from Johnny's 1969 album, At the Hoffman House. This is Johnny Shacklett with A Day in the Life of a Fool. The Naptown jazz guitarist Johnny Shacklett. Johnny recently spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to their conversation as Johnny recalls his relationship with the famous Indianapolis blues musician Guitar Pete Franklin.
In addition to Earl Grandy and John Watson, in the liner notes to your record At the Hoffman House, you also mentioned the blues musician Guitar Pete Franklin as an early inspiration.
And that was happening also.
Yeah, tell me about your connection with Pete Franklin.
Pete, I was walking down the street. I was a young man, 15, I don't know. I heard this guitar music, and I'm crossing the bridge in Indianapolis, Indiana Avenue. There's like a water aqueduct, they call the canal. And I was just walking over this canal, and then sort of like underneath it, there's sort of like a footpath also, or at that time there was. And I heard this guitar music, and I looked over the side of the, you know, the bridge, and I saw, I could just see it looked like, I couldn't see the guitar but two legs, but I thought it was a person listening to the radio. So I liked the music because it was, I was already in love with guitar. So on the radio, I used to listen occasionally to a guitarist, Django Reinhardt. And I said, boy, there's someone under the bridge there listening to Django Reinhardt. When I walked under the bridge, there was Pete Franklin playing guitar. Sounded just like Django Reinhardt. And a lot of people were not aware of it. But he was called Guitar Pete. Pete was a blues guitarist. Everyone knew him for playing blues. Pete could play anything. It was a fantastic guitarist for all the old standards. Some of the old gypsy compositions played by Django Reinhardt. He used to play one that I would love to hear him play. It was called Dark Eyes. And I think it's an old classic that Django plays, but that started me. Pete worked with me, and not only Pete helped me by showing me some of the various chord progressions to some of the ballads.
Let's pause and listen to a classic recording from guitar Pete Franklin, one of Johnny Shacklett's early guitar mentors. From 1962, this is guitar Pete Franklin with Sail On.
Baby, you can't miss trivia, but you can't when I go home. Well, I got somebody there, baby, that will be you leave me alone. But remember, baby, just before you sail away.
Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from Johnny Shacklett after this short break. This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. This is the first episode in our two-part series paying tribute to guitarist Johnny Shacklett, one of the greatest living legends of the Naptown jazz scene. We've been discussing some of the teachers and mentors that shaped Johnny's early years in Indianapolis. Johnny studied with legendary Naptown musicians like Earl Grande and guitar Pete Franklin. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke with Johnny Shacklett. Let's return to their conversation as Johnny recalls some of the legendary Naptown musicians that shaped his work in music.
Were there any other mentors or teachers you had at that time that you'd want to mention?
There was a singer in town, and that was Mrs. Eubanks.
Mm.
And in fact, she has a son named Donnie Eubanks. Mm-hmm.
You played with him, right?
Yes, yes. And his mother was a great, her name was Bertha Eubanks.
Yeah, she was a drummer, right?
Well, yes, she played like the cocktail drums.
Wow.
She was a singer.
Okay,
really.
I thought she was primarily a drummer. I didn't realize that. Wow.
No, no,
okay.
No. She was a cocktail singer and drummer and played in all of the clubs. Well, when she found out that I could play guitar, she needed accompaniment. Well, I didn't know a lot of the songs, but I could read all the chord progressions. So I started gigging with her in all the clubs around Indianapolis, and all of the old standards, you know, like Our Love Is Here to Stay, and you name an old standard, and she knew it.
Mm.
And that helped a lot. And I think Pete played with her also. But when Pete was off doing blues, a lot of times I would fill in for Pete playing with providing accompaniment with her. And it gradually grew to the point that one day a saxophonist by the name of Hiawatha Edmondson, who also was responsible for a lot of the arrangements for the Count Basie Band, was playing at George's Bar in Indianapolis. And I'm just recalling, I think that was on Indiana Avenue.
That's correct,
yes. And he was there for an entire week. And before his week ended, I think what happened is he was looking for a guitarist. And I don't know who passed my name along, but he called me and, you know, I told him, well, at that time, I didn't, you know, wasn't that convinced that I was the guy for him, but That's when I left Indianapolis.
How old were you at that time?
I was 17. I also worked with a band leader by the name of Duke Hampton.
Of course, yeah, from the Hampton family, yeah.
And the whole Hampton family. And I knew several of them. And that was really a good experience.
Wow.
This was before I had really gotten myself together enough to feel that I could go on a decent job. And that helped me learn. Also a job with Larry Ridley. Mm. I had a job with him also. But anyway, I was playing, and we were playing, and I remember Duke. When you play guitar, electric guitar, you have the tendency, young players, to turn the volume up and play loud. It makes you feel like you're doing more than you're really doing. And so we were playing, and I remember Duke, very gracious person, said, could you turn it down just a little bit so we can all blend with each other? And I said, sure, I'll turn it down. So we continued to play. So then a few moments later, he was back again. He said, could you turn it down just a little bit more? And I said, of course. So then we were playing, and then he came back again. He said, it still has to go down just a little bit more. And I said, if I turn it down anymore, I'll have to turn it off. He said, I tell you what, go ahead and turn it off.
Wow.
And you'll still get your money. Then after the gig, what he explained to me, he said, you know, the blues chords is just three chords. They only fit blues songs. They don't fit these other songs. They have their own specific chord progression. And those are some of the things that you remember when you're learning to become a musician.
That's incredible.
But that was, I always remember that.
Let's pause and listen to a classic recording from Duke Hampton and the Hampton Family Band from their 1953 single for King Records. This is The Push. That was Duke Hampton and the Hampton Family Band with The Push. Our guest this week, guitarist Johnny Shacklett, performed with Duke Hampton's band during the 1950s. Johnny's first big break in music came at the age of 17 years old when he left Naptown with the Hiawatha Edmondson Band. Hiawatha was an important Midwest jazz saxophonist. Before we return to our conversation with Johnny Shacklett, let's listen to a rare recording featuring Hiawatha. From 1952, this is Stomp Gordon and his band with Damp Rag, featuring Hiawatha Edmondson on saxophone.
Damp Rag! Damp Rag!
Tell the truth, snag a tooth!
Damp Rag!
My, my!
Shot out. Oh, damn rag. Mm-hmm. Yes, damn
rag. Baby, you're walking disgrace.
Damn rag.
Go home, baby, because it ain't no use. You got big red feet and you look like a goose.
Yeah.
You look so bad from your feet to your head. You look like you never slept in a decent bed.
Right.
You remind me of something that the world despised. Baby, where'd you get those three big eyes?
Damn rag.
Yeah.
That was Stomp Gordon and his band with Damp Rag, featuring Hiawatha Edmondson on saxophone. Our guest this week, guitarist Johnny Shacklett, toured with Hiawatha Edmondson's band as a teenager during the 1950s. Johnny recently spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to their conversation.
And Johnny, you mentioned George's Bar. Were you playing a lot on Indiana Avenue during the 1950s?
Occasionally, but a lot of that was before at 17 was when I left with Hiawatha Edmondson.
Mm-hmm.
And that was straight to, we went to, a nightclub in Illinois and in Chicago, and then we headed toward New York and different places like that. So I played with Hiawatha for several years, and Hiawatha was a genius. He was a horn player, played tenor, alto, and flute, and did massive arranging. So with Hiawatha, that was a situation where you couldn't play any of the basic major, minor, diminished. You know, you had to play some of the more advanced modern chords. But anyhow, my career was sort of gradually molding in from various places. Occasionally, I would return back to Indianapolis, and I met the person that I view as the most profound, I should say, theorist, and person that not only mentored me, but inspired me. His name was Carl Moore.
Carl Moore, yeah.
Have you ever heard of Carl Moore?
I have, but I can't place...
Carl Moore was a guitarist.
Yeah.
In Indianapolis. And I would say the most profound guitarist that I've ever met in my life. He worked every day for the city of Indianapolis as a trash man, picking up ashes and garbage. And I used to ask him about that. And I think at the time he was supporting his mother and a daughter. And it was very clear from his perspective that I think it was more spiritual that he wanted to do one of the menial type jobs. A situation like saying, I don't want anyone saying that I can't do my share of the dirty work. Not only can I do that, but I can perform as a great artist. And he worked every day, but if you'd go over to his home for a lesson, he'd get out the music books, and he was an excellent, he could, any symphonic chair, any band, flawless. And believe me, a lot of the greats that either viewed themselves as great or whatever, I would say Carl Moore was the epitome. No problems with reading, no problems with writing, excellent repertoire. But he was kind of shy on entertaining.
Hmm. What kind of style did he play in?
Well, he was a jazz guitarist, and he was the one that started exposing me to the advanced fingerings on guitar. In other words, above and beyond the bar chord, but a lot of the block chords and a lot of the things that your people like Barney Kessel. And Johnny Smith and Herb Ellis and there was another guitarist by the name of Carl Moore.
Oscar Moore with Nat King Cole group.
Oscar,
yeah.
Oscar Moore with Nat Cole. It's amazing. There was another guitarist with Nat Cole, also was a friend of mine. That was Irvin Ashby. Mm. And he played with, he was the first guitarist with Oscar Peterson. Mm. And I played in duo with Irvin Ashby.
Wow.
And we were best friends, Irvin Ashby and myself. We never recorded, but we played a lot together.
Let's pause and listen to another track from Johnny Shacklett's 1969 album At the Hoffman House. This is the Johnny Shacklett Trio with Burke's Works. That was the legendary Naptown guitarist Johnny Shacklett with Burke's Works. And Johnny Shacklett is our guest this week. Johnny was one of many important guitarists working on the Avenue during the 1950s. Let's return to our conversation as Johnny shares his memories of these Naptown guitar greats.
Johnny, you mentioned, you know, Carl Moore, and there were so many guitarists working in Indianapolis during the time you came up. Everybody knows Wes Montgomery, but yeah, there were so many others. Bill Jennings, Paul Whedon, many other names. Bethel,
well,
Gaines, Williams. Yeah.
First of all, let's go back to Pete.
Yes, Pete Franklin.
Pete Franklin. A lot of the guitarists then were playing four-string guitar. This was before the six-string.
Yeah.
So Pete not only helped me along, but he introduced the six-string guitar to Wes Montgomery.
Hmm.
Anyway, that's what Pete told me. And believe me, Pete played very well and knew the six-string chords. And he's established such a profound following as being a blues artist, like a lot of the older blues, country blues artists. But Pete could play anything on guitar. He just loved the blues. But getting back to the other guitar players, I think you, earlier we were talking and you mentioned, in fact, you were getting ready to ask me about some of the other guitar players.
Yeah, like Bill Jennings, Paul Whedon.
Okay, yeah. Bill Jennings, I didn't, they were a little before me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew something about him. I played with the people that he played with. And I was aware of the fact that he had a brother named Hoppy that taught Bill. Were you aware of that?
I know he had a brother that played vibraphone and guitar. And,
yes,
his birth name was Al.
The word was out that he actually played more guitar than,
yeah,
than Bill did. But he was famous for playing vibes, so that was that. So, but I think you mentioned Paul Whedon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I knew Paul. I didn't have the occasion to play with him much, if I'll mean. I talked to him on a few occasions. Did you hear about Leon and John Dale, the Dale brothers?
No, I don't think I've heard of them.
Fantastic guitarists. And back then, everybody played guitar and bass. I play bass, too.
I know you were hanging around Pete Franklin at a certain point. Did you ever meet Scrapper Blackwell while you were here?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
But I can tell you the Gooch brothers.
Oh, yeah, of course. The Gooch brothers, yeah.
The Gooch brothers, that's another pair of brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, these people were playing at the same level Wes Montgomery was playing.
You've been listening to the first episode of our two-part series featuring the Naptown jazz guitarist Johnny Shacklett. Tune in next week as Johnny shares his memories of Wes Montgomery. And Johnny will also discuss the Baraka, a unique four-neck guitar he built in the late 1960s. All the time we have for this week. Thank you for tuning in. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcasts. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on Uptown, baby, like I do. Do. Nobody knows on Uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.